Well, I want to segue from that last message because it's appropriate for an introduction to what I want to talk about today. There's verses that talk about these days being like the days of Noah. And it's obvious that mankind left to itself will take us right back there. But what should be obvious is, and then as well as now, that there is a spirit dimension to all that's going on. In Daniel chapter 10, there is a very enlightening glimpse into the reality that we don't normally see. Daniel chapter 10, there was a condition that Daniel was praying about. He says, in the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a thing was revealed unto Daniel, whose name was called Belshazzar. And the thing was true, but the time appointed was long. And he understood the thing, and had understanding of the vision. In verse 2 he says, in those days I, Daniel, was mourning 3 full weeks. I ate no pleasant bread, neither came flesh nor wine in my mouth, neither did I anoint myself at all till 3 whole weeks were fulfilled. Daniel was praying fervently for something, and nothing, it seemed, was happening. And in the 24th and 25th day of the first month, as I was by the side of the great river, then I lifted up my eyes and looked, and behold, a certain man clothed in linen, whose loins were girded with fine gold of Uphaz. His body also was like beryl, and his face as the appearance of lightning, and his eyes as lamps of fire, and his arms and his feet like in color to polished brass, and the voice of his words like the voice of a multitude. He's describing a being that we have to conclude was the pre-incarnate Christ. In verse 7, and I, Daniel, alone saw the vision, for the man that was with me saw not the vision, but a great quaking fell upon them, so that they fled to hide themselves. A similar experience to what the Apostle Paul experienced on the road to Damascus. Therefore, I was left alone and saw this great vision, and there remained no strength in me, for my comeliness was turned in me unto corruption, and I retained no strength. Yet I heard the voice of the words, and when I heard the voice of his words, then was I in a deep sleep on my face, and my face toward the ground. And behold, a hand touched me, which set me upon my knees, lifted him up, and upon the palms of my hands. He was prostrate, and at least he was lifted up to be on his hands and knees. And he said unto me, O Daniel, a man greatly beloved, understand the words that I speak unto you, and stand upright, for unto you am I now sent. And when he had spoken this word unto me, I stood trembling. Then he said unto me, fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that you did set your heart to understand and to chasten yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I am come for thy words. But verse 13 is the key to understand here. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the king of Persia. That's an extraordinary revelation because we don't see it a lot. But what he's telling us is that there is a spirit power operating behind the scenes. The world as we know it through the physical actions of people that we can see. But here, the prince of Persia, this wasn't a man. Understand, this was not a man. The prince of Persia in this case withstood Christ and his assistant, Michael, the archangel, for 3 solid weeks. And we have to wonder, what kind of spiritual power was that? That's the point that I want to bring out today. There's many prophecies, and we're familiar with them, and I'm going to breeze through them rather quickly. But what I want us to see is the underlying spiritual influence that is going on in the world today, because it would explain the craziness that we see all around us. When we consider the news, when we hear what leaders are saying, we have to wonder, how could it ever have gotten so crazy as this? Even Daniel at this point in time didn't understand this. He did afterwards. But Daniel was given a glimpse into the reality of what's going on behind the scenes. In Ephesians 6:12, we're given a similar enlightenment. Ephesians 6. And this reinforces what we just read there in Daniel. 6:12. We've heard this many times. In verse 11, put on the whole armor of God, that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil. Our spiritual armor is going to be necessary to deal with the spiritual conditions that we see. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Do we realize that? Does it make sense? Is it a factor in our thinking? How seriously do we take that? That there is a spiritual power working behind the scenes that has an agenda. This verse and the one in Daniel is not a conspiracy theory. We have a reliable source that can see a dimension that we can't see. The Apostle John in the book of Revelation describes many spirit scenes, not real scenes, but spirit scenes that lay out what's going on in the world situation. For example, John described the 4 horsemen. Not real horses, but representations of something. He describes the beasts rising out of the sea and out of the land. That's not what really happened, but it was a representation of this spiritual dimension. He describes Satan in various ways, all of them illustrating the spirit forces that are at work behind the scenes. In Matthew 11, we're given another illustration of how things work. But Matthew 11, verse 12. And this might be a little different take on this verse than is normally explained. And from the days of John the Baptist until now, the kingdom of heaven suffers violence, and the violent take it by force. What I'm suggesting is that the kingdom of heaven and the message of the kingdom of heaven is bad-mouthed from virtually every source. And it's the activists who have the upper hand at the present time. In the battle between the forces of good and evil, in our time, evil usually prevails. Why is that? It's because good men tend to be passive. The agenda-driven are the motivated ones. We see that in the world situation today. It seems that the evil are more driven. Various sources in the media are calling what's going on right now a lying circus. Wonder where they got that idea. We see the censorship of free speech, especially where it regards the truth. And we have a sense for what the truth is. But that's not appreciated by those people who are in control. There's certain truths they don't want brought out. They have to censor. A very different world than a year or two ago. In Ephesians 3, verse 20, we're given something here that ought to teach us how to approach the current situation. Ephesians 3, verse 20. Now unto him that is able to do exceeding abundantly above all that we ask or think, according to the power that works in us, unto him be glory in the church by Christ Jesus through all ages, world without end. There is a power that works in us. That too is an underlying power. In this case, a positive influence. Whereas the majority, it's a negative influence. But there is a power that works in us. And it's the power of a sound mind, for one thing. That's one of the results of that power that works in us. The ability to exercise the power of discernment, to know what is true and what is not. Society in general doesn't have that power. Those that are called of God do. And we need to keep our mind focused on the ability to discern what's going on. We know from Bible prophecy that there's going to be some significant developments in the near future. There are going to be forces that bring together a coalition of nations that are going to take actions that are going to change the game dramatically. Referred to in many places as the Great Tribulation. There is a time of great troubles coming. We need to understand that there is a spiritual power behind the scenes that is going to cause all this to happen. In a practical sense, there's going to have to be a threat. And what is that threat? Nations are going to feel that they better work together to combat that threat. We know them to be the nations of Europe, described as 10 kings, who are going to coalesce, they're going to come together and create a super nation, And then those 10 kings are going to hand over their power to an even higher authority. Let me just give you a little glimpse here about what I'm talking about. We know right now that this country, and for that matter the rest of the world, is under a mandate. It has to do with a health issue, a viral infection that's going around. And in this country, the Centers for Disease Control have mandated that we do certain things. Well, that works in this country. But keep in mind that the same thing is happening in virtually every country on earth. And our Centers for Disease Control don't have any jurisdiction outside of our borders. So what's driving it in all the other countries? There is a greater authority at work here. And it works through selected leaders to impose that mandate pretty much uniformly around the world. What is that greater power? How does it control all of these nations? My point is that we need to be discerning that there is a power that's greater than any particular, any single nation. The same thing is going to happen as it affects the coalition of the 10 kings that are going to come together in Europe. There is a power that's greater. Now, we're told that Satan is going to empower two major factors that bring this coalition together. One is a secular governmental power, and the other is a religious power. They are going to inspire the bringing together of these kings. But why would they want to do that? Well, it's because they perceive a threat. They feel threatened. What is that power that threatens them? Frankly, there's only three powers in the world right now: United States, Europe, and China. What other power center is there? Now, the United States is not going to threaten Europe. Europe is not going to threaten itself. So what does that leave? It leaves China as the threat that Europe feels it needs to respond to in advance. Okay? Now, there is a clue about that, and that's found in Daniel chapter 11. And let's keep in mind that this power is not something that just comes together in the last few years. In Daniel 11, and this is after Europe has conquered the Middle East, in verse 44, Daniel 11:44, but tidings out of the east and out of the north shall trouble him. Therefore he shall go forth with a great fury to destroy and to utterly make away many. This is the lingering threat that has been building, that frightens Europe and the religious entity that patterns itself after what is known as the beast power. But the threat is from the east and the north. Who can that be? That doesn't describe North America. In verse 45, while we're here, let's look at that. And he shall plant the tabernacle of his palace between the seas in the glorious holy mountain. Yet he shall come to his end, and none shall help him. this is a very potent picture of what is coming. But what will cause this political coalition? Well, it's threat from the east and the north. Now, there's a religious faction involved as well. There is a political network that will use a religious organization as its front for what it's really doing. And we've known about that for years. Christ described that particular entity. There is a large religious institution, and we've looked at that religious institution in the past as being what is called the false prophet. But I want to point out something to you, that the false prophet is a power above the religious institution. It's using the religious institution as its front, but its work is behind the scenes. We have known that that particular entity has influenced world history for hundreds and hundreds of years. Christ describes their activity in Revelation chapter 18. And we should let's turn there, Revelation 18, because it's so important, it's so potent in revealing what's really going on. Revelation 18. And this chapter basically describes the destruction of not so much the religious institution, but the entire network, the spiritual network that's behind what's going on. In Revelation chapter 18, verse 3, it says, "For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies." That kind of gives us a picture of what this particular power is doing. It's not their religion so much. It's the political things going on behind the scenes. The kings of the earth aren't necessarily of that particular religious persuasion. Some were. Not necessarily all. But the thing is, there is an influence, there is a power that has been working. In verse 4, it puts out a warning. "And I heard another voice from heaven saying, Come out of her, my people, that you be not partakers of her sins, and that you receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Reward her, even as she rewarded you, and double unto her, double according to her works. In the cup which she hath filled, fill to her double." What is that referring to? This entity makes war with the saints, and they're going to be rewarded doubly for what they have done. But the point is that there is a spirit at work behind the scenes. It uses its human minions, but there is a greater power, an overpower, if you want to call it that. There's something also that illustrates that, and we can see it in Revelation 19, verse 20. We're right near there. Let's stay with this. Revelation 19, verse 20. I'm going to start in verse I'll start in verse 19. And I saw the beast and the kings of the earth and their armies gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. This is a massing of military forces to oppose the descending Christ. They're gathered together to make war against him that sat on the horse and against his army. And the beast was taken, and with him the false prophet that wrought miracles before him, which he deceived them that had received the mark of the beast and them that worshipped his image. These both were cast alive into a lake of fire burning with brimstone. And the remnant were slain with the sword of him that sat upon the horse, which sword proceeded out of his mouth. And all the fowls were filled with their flesh. Now something important to notice there, and it may not be obvious, but this is when the beast and the false prophet are going to be apprehended alive. So that tells us that right up until the time of the Battle of Armageddon, they're going to be still alive. But yet we see in Revelation chapter 18 the destruction of the religious entity. So that tells us that the false prophet who is over this religious entity is still alive after it's destroyed. There are to be 10 kings in Europe. We've already talked about that. In Daniel chapter 7, we see that these 10 kings are going to be meddling in political alliances. The false prophet is going to somehow cut down 3 of the 10, leaving 7. And then he is going to enjoin himself becoming the 8th. We see that in Revelation 17, verse 11. And the beast that was and is not, even he is the 8th, and he makes himself the 8th, and is of the 7. He adds himself to the 7 remaining kings and goes into perdition. Just by way of explanation, the 10 kings which you saw are the 10 kings which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings 1 hour with the beast. These 10 kings are going to coalesce together into a single super state and then turn their power over to a greater entity. Verse 13, these have one mind and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. It's where the beast gains its military and economic power. But something else is going to happen. Revelation 17, verses 16 to 18. This is a new development. And the 10 horns which you saw, and that's referring to the 10 kings, which you saw upon the beast, these shall come to hate the whore, and shall make her desolate and naked, and shall eat her flesh and burn her with fire. For God has put it in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree and give their kingdom unto the beast until the words of God shall be fulfilled. And if we have any doubt about it, and the woman which you saw is that great city which reigns over the kings of the earth. There is going to come a point in time where these 10 kings are going to be fed up with the activities of this particular woman, let's call her. They're going to destroy her. And while they destroy her, yet the false prophet remains alive and still in power with the beast, who has set up his military headquarters in Jerusalem. Daniel 11:45 tells us that. The beast power will establish his military headquarters in Jerusalem, even though his homeland is in Europe. And those two will remain in power there right up until the Battle of Armageddon. Question is always, there is another spiritual activity that's going to be going on at that same time. We know from many sources that the beast power, the great tribulation, will be approximately 3.5 years, 42 months. It's very specific. When do we start counting the 3.5 years? Everybody wants to know. Well, Christ spoke of that in Matthew 24, verse 15, and also Daniel 11, 31. He refers back to Daniel 11 again. This is the key trigger event. When you see the abomination of desolation standing in the holy place where it ought not, that's the key event to be watching for. Now, during that same period of time, there's going to be two witnesses in Jerusalem who are going to be prophesying. In Daniel 11, verses 32 to 35, we see another factor. Daniel 11. Important chapter. There's a lot of material in Daniel 11. I wish I had time to bring it all out. But let's just look at this particular thing. Verse 32. And such as do wickedly against the covenant shall he corrupt by flatteries. But the people that do know their God shall be strong and do exploits. And they that understand among the people shall instruct many. Yet they shall fall by the sword and by flame and by captivity and by spoil many days. Now when they shall fall, they shall be helped with a little help, but many shall cleave to them with flatteries. And some of them of understanding, notice it says some, and some of them of understanding shall fall to try them and to purge and to make them white, even to the time of the end, because it is yet for a time appointed. God's faithful servants, it says here, are going to be doing exploits. And we have to wonder, what is that going to entail? Now keep in mind, the two witnesses are witnessing from Jerusalem. And I'm sure it's going to dominate the news media. Perhaps in a negative way, but we're going to understand what they're saying. I mean, the world is going to be tormented by what they're saying. And no doubt the news media will torment back. But the word is going to get out. And there's going to be the opportunity for God's people to be in on this game of doing exploits. We've got to be ready for that. We've got to be ready for that. The beast and his allied armies are going to be arrayed to fight the invading force from the east and north. But ultimately, they're going to be fighting against Christ, because he's going to interrupt this scene before that battle is engaged. And both forces are going to turn against him. In Revelation 18, we're told, "Come out of her, my people." What does that mean? How do we come out? Where do we go? Is there a safe place on earth where people are going to go? Some say there is a place. I doubt that very many could go there. We're going to have to come out of her in many cases, especially those of us that are too old to survive the rigors of whatever that would involve. We're going to have to come out of her in place, in our minds. We're going to have to know what's going on, what's forcing it. What's working behind the scenes to make it happen? As it says in 2 Timothy 2:15, study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that needs not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. rightly dividing, using our senses of discernment, which Hebrews 5 talks about. We need to be using our senses of discernment to rightly divide the word of truth, not just the word of truth in the Bible, but the truth of what's going on in the world. We need to be discerning. There are exploit opportunities coming. Should be a blast. Should be exciting. It may not be healthy, but it'll certainly be exciting. We want to be ready when the exploit opportunity that's just ahead of us comes about.